Good morning. Welcome to Shattering Myths, the program devoted to the most important and fastest growing, even largest segment of our society. To those of you who have come to realize, as I have, that the world's political, religious, military, and economic institutions are corrupt, that they have become counterproductive, and that they cannot be fixed. Our phone number, if you'd like to join us anytime over the next 2 hours, toll free, 877-376-4545. Friday's show last week was pre-recorded. My last show that I broadcast from Central California was on Thursday, and it was a sweet and yet sad goodbye. To say goodbye to the kind of beautiful vista that was out my studio window as I was able to greet Scott and all of you each morning 5 days a week. I'm now three quarters of the way across the country. And broadcasting from another lovely place, happy to be with you today. I'm sort of out of a car and out of a truck, though, at the moment. The house that we expected to buy did not close because of undisclosed issues. And we have tried to buy another with the truck with our furniture just now a day out, but that has not gone well thus far. So we are living out of a suitcase for a while, and about ready to move on back to our primary home, which is in Virginia. And we'll see how the exercise of moving to where we can be enjoy the pleasures of being a grandparent. We might have to postpone that for another day. So as I share with you and re-engage in the news this morning, I beg a bit of indulgence. I'm not playing with all of the tools that I would normally have as assets. In the news this morning, one of the things that resonated with me, not positively, but as an irritant, like scraping fingernails on a blackboard, was when the speaker, and I think it was the Congressional Prayer Breakfast, said, "The one true God who reigns over every nation." That's Pauline. Paul, in the 13th chapter of Romans, said that God established governments, and that he established governments for the good of mankind, and that as citizens of those governments, we should submit to their authority. Yahweh's view of government is the antithesis of that. So the congressman or senator who spoke those words was echoing what Paul said. God's view is exactly the opposite. God's view is we ought to walk away from our country. It's the first requirement to participate in the covenant. It's the first thing Yahweh asked of Abraham. This is not complicated. This does not require interpretation. Open the book of Genesis, the first book of the Torah, to about the midway point, and you will find that it focuses on one individual, Abraham, for the purpose of establishing the covenant relationship, the terms and benefits of that relationship. And the very first thing that Yahweh says to Abram is to walk away from your country. If God asked Abram to walk away from his country before he could engage in a relationship with him, it is impossible that God reigns over countries, wants us to submit to countries, and has established countries, nations, for the good of mankind. Those things are absolute and total opposites. It is God's advice to us, which is why we begin the first hour of this show this way each time, that we, if we wish to engage in a relationship with him, if we want to know him, we walk away from religion and from politics, from militarism and economic schemes. until we are willing to disengage from and disassociate ourselves from the corruption of human institutions, we are not welcome in God's company. In fact, we're not even receptive to what God has to say or is offering. For a long time now, better part of 12 years, maybe now 14 years. Well, I guess it's 14 years because I began saying this in the fall of 2001. That America's involvement in Afghanistan would be just like America's experience in Vietnam. That we would invade, break the country, leave it in chaos, that we would spill an enormous amount of American blood, and even more Afghani blood, just as we did in Vietnam, and that ultimately we'd leave the country worse than we found it, and that as a result, within months of the time that we leave Afghanistan, just as was the case with Vietnam, the very system that we tried to keep at bay, in this case the Taliban, their communism, would take over the country. It would be as if we were never there. It would be like putting your finger in a tall glass of water and pulling it out, finding that you made absolutely no difference, except for the fact that a lot of people are dead. A lot of coin has been spilt, and your credibility has been shattered. That is what I predicted in Vietnam. And the only thing that may not strike you as a fair comparison is the amount of carnage. Nearly 60,000 American soldiers lost their lives sacrificing to make a bad situation worse based upon outright lies in Vietnam. And in Afghanistan and Iraq combined, the number is 10% of that. And you might say, so that is not a comparison. You got that wrong. No, I didn't. Scott, do you know how many returning American vets who served in Afghanistan and Iraq are taking their lives every day?
No, I don't know exactly the number, but I know it's at an alarming rate.
Yeah, the published rate is 22 a day. That represents 40% states representing 40% of the population. Only states whose total population is 40% of the United States even report to this. But of the 40% that report it, the number is 22. And when you realize that according to the own documents in those states, since it's a voluntary system, you only have 80% compliance at best. So if you do the math for the remaining 60% of America and for 100% compliance rather than 20, the number turns out to be, and I'm not good at a lot of things, but I'm okay at math, it's 80 per day. Multiply 80 per day by the 14 years that have transpired since we invaded Afghanistan and Iraq. When you do that math, the number comes out between 250 and 300,000. And these are returning vets who have taken their lives because they were lied to, because of the horrible things they witnessed, because of the carnage that they endured for nothing, and the debilitating effect that has on an individual's conscience. And so rather than having 60,000 die in a war, in the case of Afghanistan and Iraq, the number has been closer to 250,000. Now, the reason I bring this up is the Afghan government is now launching a counteroffensive against the Taliban and the Islamic State and their combined forces throughout the north. In Afghanistan, American troops are no longer engaged in fighting. They're a training force. And what we are seeing now is overt aggression on behalf of the Taliban and a association between the Taliban and the Islamic State to take back what was given to them by the United States during the Carter administration. They're going to take back control of the country. And every military officer, every politician in the American government recognizes that's the reality. That the Taliban will resume control of that country. It will be as if we were never there. It will be Vietnam all over again. And you're witnessing now major offenses and large swaths of territory. In the case of this particular battle and campaign, the Taliban have cut off tens of thousands of people. It's in Kunduz, which is in the north, where the Islamic State Mujahideen have been equipping and training the Taliban to be a larger and more effective fighting unit, and that they are now fighting alongside one another, and scores of people are dying each day. But the combined strength of the Islamic State and the Taliban in Afghanistan has taken over the north. There's only a matter of time before it's all Afghanistan. Yesterday, the bodies of 18 foreign fighters were found, including two women that were supporting them. The Afghanistan's immediate northern neighbors, Tajikistan, Uzbekistan, Kyrgyzstan, and Chechnya, as well as Turkey, all supplied Mujahideen. This has become a world war. Of those killed, they were all from neighboring Islamic countries, five of them. They were all wearing black headbands. This article said from CNN, marked with the same Islamic verses used by the Islamic State in Syria and Iraq. When you realize that the Islamic State has become so popular that it's able to draw foreign fighters from five different countries into Afghanistan, and that they're wearing slogans from the Quran, you know how big a mess we're in. It's the beginning of World War III. It is Islam against the rest of the world. Everyone's going to lose. A massive military exercise has been planned in the American West across a number of states, both on public and private land. It has become the stuff of conspiracy, so I'm fairly confident that on Genesis Communication Network that it has been described in conspiratorial terms. I think our listeners know that I do not venture into conspiracy, and don't venture into it for a whole host of reasons. But that does not change the fact that that the government, the U.S. government, has decided that it is somehow necessary to conduct massive military exercises over a three-month period over the entire American West on public and private land. I find it very alarming. And the U.S. government is saying that, yes, we're doing it because we need to train our troops to be able to fight and train that might be similar to that. Well, why don't you tell me where the most similar terrain is to the terrain found in the American West? Scott, I'm going to give you one guess. Where is the most similar terrain to the terrain found in the American West? How about the American West? Okay, let's go with the obvious answer. The one place where the terrain is most similar to the terrain found in the American West is the American West. And if you're training to be able to fight in terrain in the American West, where are you training to fight? All right. Now, there is some places, very small amounts of places, but there's some places in the American West where the terrain is somewhat similar to the Middle East. So your response is somewhat valid. Now, let me say somewhat valid because having become familiar with the American West and the deserts that are there versus the God-forsaken deserts of Syria and Iraq and Iran and Jordan, Saudi Arabia, these places, they are not comparable. Yeah, could you find a place in Death Valley of sand dunes that would be comparable? Yes. But overall, no. Are there places in those countries where they have rocky, desolate mountains like we have in the American West? Yeah, there's a few of those. But that's the small amount of the territory. Truthfully, the only place that's like Texas is Texas. The only place that's like California is California. But let's just say that they aren't lying through their teeth, that the government is trying something new, that it's going to actually tell us the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. Let's just say that our imagination is allowed to venture into that netherland. Why is America's military training to invade a Middle Eastern country? Why would they be doing that? What happened the last time that we invaded two Middle Eastern countries? And we had our troops maneuvering in Somalia, in Libya, in Yemen, in Iraq, and in Afghanistan. Can you tell me what the result was of those maneuvers, Scott?
Nothing good, but even it's like your initial point that you made. If you're training in the American West, you're training to do something in the American West because there's nothing like it in the world. Like you said, there's bits and pieces that fit into portions of the world, but there's nothing like it. And we've been in enough Middle Eastern conflicts now that if we want to train to do something in the Middle East, we have bases there that we can go train right there.
That's correct. But why not just shoot ourselves in the head before it?
Well, now, yeah.
Let's just say that you decided that rather than buy something nice for the family, that what you needed to do is spend your money on the most expensive, most high-tech, most performance-oriented golf clubs ever made. And you got the snazziest bag. You bought the best shoes, the shoes worn by the touring pros. And then you went out and you spent a fortune getting the best lessons and the best training you could possibly get. What might we expect that you would do after all of that?
Well, I'd probably put the clubs away and never play again.
Okay, well, there's not the answer I was looking for. We'll be back. Welcome back. So I didn't get the answer I expected from Scott.
I would have tried.
I would play golf. Yeah, by the way, I appreciated your offer. Levity was what was required at the moment, so I'm not being critical here. If you got the best golf clubs in the world, you got the best training on how to use those golf course gloves in the world, you'd go out and play golf. That's just what you do. Well, if you've acquired and built the most destructive military hardware money can buy, and you've had the best training that money will allow on the use of that destructive hardware, you're going to go and invade someplace. You're going to go blow things up. That's what you're going to go do. That's the problem here, is that it prepares our government to use that which it has spent money on. You know, it's kind of interesting in the sense of military hardware. For the last, since World War II, with the exception of the stupidity of Vietnam and the stupidity of the two Gulf Wars where we used our Navy to launch raids and cruise missiles and shock and awe, making bad situations worse, we've had no use for our Navy. all of those submarines that we have built that are ballistic submarines never accomplished a thing. Have another thing. And all the airplanes and air wings that we had flying off those aircraft carriers, they're all obsolete. You know, the aircraft carrier has a useful life. It's about 20 years. The airplanes flying off them have a useful life. It's less than that. And they just go obsolete. So all the money spent, obsolete. Now, if you were to say, oh, I'll take the devil's advocate and position and say, no, they serve their purpose. America wasn't invaded. Could you please tell me, Scott, who did the American Navy keep from invading the United States during that period of time?
The
clock is ticking.
That's your answer? Nobody?
Who might have even thought under their wildest imaginations that there would be some benefit? You come up with somebody, okay, so there was no invasion that they thwarted. Why don't you come up with a nation where you can come up with a plausible reason that they would be motivated and have the capability of invading America over the past 60 years? I want you to come up with a nation that could have done it had they wanted to, and their motivation for having done so, that might have at least considered doing it if we didn't have this massive Navy and Air Force.
I don't think there's anyone. I mean, you could point
to... I think Israel. I think those, you just can't trust those Israelis. What about Israel? You know, they need more land.
No.
No, not Israel. Okay. It's okay, the French. Yeah, the no. French. No, the French don't like anything outside of France. Okay. Not the French. Okay. How about the Ruskies?
The Ruskies.
You know, you got that big bear and Putin, and he loves to saber rattle. So does Russia have a merchant marine capable of transferring troops to America?
Not that I know of. No.
Do they have battle groups anchored by aircraft carriers of the Nimitz class that they could fly to off America's coast, up and down the east, southern, and western coasts?
Not that I've heard of.
No.
So no.
So 0 for 2. They can't project a force.
Maybe they'll create a land bridge.
Is Russia smaller or bigger than the United States?
It's larger.
Does Russia have more minerals, more gas, oil, and rare earth minerals, or does the United States?
I want to say Russia does.
By 100 to 1.
Yeah.
By 100 to 1. So what would be the advantage for Russia to say, you know what I want to do is I want to spend all of our money invading and occupying a country that is has fewer natural assets now than we have and has less land than we have because, well, we just think that would be fun to do.
Well, I've always stood by that the best defense that we have of our country are these two things called oceans that sit on both sides of us.
But then you got the Canadians.
Oh,
I think the Canadians are poised to invade the United States.
As a Minnesotan, I can tell you that the Canadians are very nice people, and
and maybe it'd be a good thing if they did, right?
It could be, yeah. I mean,
and we know that the Mexicans have already invaded. How many Mexican troops are there in America right now?
Oh.
20 million? 40 million? 70 million? 80 million? I don't know. What do you think the number is?
Well, they're sleeper cells, but...
They're sleeper cells. They are. And by the way, for those who are listening who are Hispanic, I actually, and I know this is unpopular amongst conservatives, so I'll apologize to our conservative audience in advance. I have no problem with Hispanics being here. Legally or illegally. My issue really, because most work, most are willing to work, most are here to benefit their families. And I have, you know, met and encountered and had long business relationships and discussions with many, many, many Hispanics and never found one to be the least bit troubling. In fact, the reason I was most reluctant to sell the Central California home was our landscaper. He was a couple of years older than I am. What a wonderful Hispanic man. Raising his family here, his sons, who I got to know, were as classy as he was. I would trust the man with my children's lives, the most precious commodity on earth to me. And that's been my experience. I just think our government is stupid and the way that they deal with this, and you could resolve the cost issue just by having a national sales tax and doing away with the income tax. But so the Mexicans are already invaded. Our Navy didn't do a darn thing to stop them, nor did our Air Force.
Yeah, well, exactly. And it's ridiculous. And also, trying to fight people that come here, that's one of the great parts about this country, is that other people wanted to come here.
You're right. But they want to come here to live here, not to destroy it.
Well, that's exactly
it. With the exception of the Islamic jihadists.
Except where I'm at.
Little Somalia.
Yeah, yeah. It's actually little Mogadishu.
Mogadishu, in Minnesota, right?
There's nobody that's gonna try and take us over.
No,
there's nobody.
America's military hasn't fought for American freedom and to prevent the occupation of this country ever. Ever.
I would go.
There's 101 wars in the 400 years since the colonists first came here. And it's just not the case. It is the ultimate myth in America, the patriotic and military myth, that it seems to be the hardest of all to pierce.
Let me go one step further than just the military for you. What has our government officials done to protect our freedoms or promote our freedoms or advance our freedoms?
They've robbed us of our savings.
Have they done anything?
Nope.
Please inform me if they have, because I can't think of any off the top of my head.
No. And now they want to have massive exercises in the western states. And you've already designated American citizens as the enemy, because the NSA is in business to spy on Americans and has completely ignored the U.S. Constitution in terms of due process and unreasonable search and seizure, and are spying on your every mouse click on the Internet, on your every telephone call, and have drones that are out to spy on your every move and can track every credit card transaction that you make. And so they have designated you as the enemy because they're the ones you're spying on, and now they have the military exercises in the western states of America. I've met the enemy, and the enemy is us.
Isn't there something in the Constitution about a standing army on American soil, something like that?
Yeah, it's the Jeffersonian plank. Jefferson was far more opposed to an established religion in America to the military. We know Jefferson to be opposed to an established religion, and yet we have one in socialist secular humanism. But he was most opposed to a standing military. And he knew that a standing army, an established military, would deprive the citizens of their freedoms, of their ability to get access to good information, because propaganda would replace actual facts, and that it would rob them of their freedoms, and it would rob them of their monies, and it would establish a dishonest culture in the nation. And of course, the War College of the United States 2 months ago released their report that deception runs so rampant in the U.S. military that it's pervasive from officers to enlisted. Everything Jefferson said was right. And Jefferson was therefore opposed to this. But it's unconstitutional to do what they're doing. But when large institutions, Scott, become empowered, they impose rules that they themselves don't play by. There was a big article that came out yesterday on thousands of IRS auditors cheating on their taxes. They enforce rules that they themselves don't play by, and they were all given promotions. The State Department has established rules on freedom of information. And when somebody from the media requests information, they've established rules where they say that transparency, they have to provide the information. Do you know that this administration is more than 2 years behind in dealing with requests for information, and is stonewalling the press at every possible turn to get information about its dealings. They don't play by the same set of rules. And then, Scott, you've got the concern here with the NSA spying on Americans, making the citizens the enemy. That's why Edward Snowden was such a godsend. And then the U.S. military now training in America to be more familiar with exercises on the terrain that's most similar to the American West. You have to combine that with the militarization of America's police. What if I wanted, if I lived in the Baltimore area, and I wanted to go off and pick up a cup of coffee at 10:15 in the evening, what would happen to me? I'd be arrested. There's a curfew. I do not have freedom. If you live in the Baltimore, Maryland area, you have been deprived of your freedom for nothing that you have done. You cannot go out of your home from 10 p.m. to 6 a.m. You're precluded from doing so. Your city has been turned into a military state. No fault of yours, but that's what your government did, and it's flying drones overhead every hour of the day. Welcome back to Shattering This. Scott, you know that one of America's favorite targets for drones was a place called Yemen. In fact, it was Yemen that the Obamanator stretched the U.S. Constitution way past breaking, where he, on his determination alone, without investigation, without indictment, without trial, without conviction, decided that he could take it upon himself to kill an American citizen in a foreign country, and to kill his son and wife and extended members of his family, and that he could fly, he could designate someone to fly a drone and shoot a missile that would kill an American citizen. That was in Yemen. Last time I checked, if you, Scott, decided that the guy that was driving slowly in front of you and wouldn't let you pass, if you decided that you wanted to fly a drone and blow up the driver and the driver's family, that would be considered murder.
Yeah, and I'd be prosecuted quite heavily.
Yeah. So the President of the United States, though, made this decision on an American citizen living. In fact, he was the senior imam at several mosques, one in San Diego, one in outside of Washington, D.C., to kill him and to, with collateral damage, kill his family along with him. How did our bombing of Yemen turn out for the Yemenites?
Horribly. The only number I saw on it, and I remember this number, it was, they don't know the exact number of people that were killed, but it was over, like January of last year, it was over 2,400 people dead due to these. And then of those, they're not sure if they were targets that they killed or just people.
Yeah. The best estimates of number of people killed by our drones exceed 4,600. And the number is probably north of 6,000 killed by American drones. Let's just look at Yemen for a moment. You know how many people died in Yemen yesterday as a result of the civil war that we started there? 120. Almost all of them women and children. And the Houthis, which are the Shias being armed and equipped by Iran, that the existing abomination administration is trying to free to complete their nuclear bomb and to relieve them of all sanctions, that the Iranians are supplying the Houthis. The only means that the Yemenite government had to keep the Shias at bay were the Sunni Mujahideen. Who do you think America attacked? The Sunni.
The Mujahideen. Yeah.
That's who we hacked with our drones. And we killed enough of them that they were no longer a deterrent. And what happened to the country as a result of that? Total anarchy and civil war.
Total anarchy, yep.
And then the Saudi Arabians, using American bombers at America's insistence, with America's Navy sitting offshore, decided that they would use Yemen for target practice and started dropping bombs. How did that work out so far?
The same way it always works out. They hate us.
Yeah. So now the Saudi Arabians are contemplating a land invasion of Yemen, because their bombing of Yemen has only broken it and made people mad and made a bad situation worse. So how do you suspect that the Saudi Arabian invasion of Yemen is going to turn out?
Same way it always turns out. Wasn't it in Yemen where there were so many drone attacks that the quote from like a 12-year-old kid was, we prefer cloudy days because then we can see the drones.
Yeah.
Because sunny days meant that we couldn't see any drones. And
right, because they were up higher.
Yep.
And against the brightness of the sky, where on the cloudy days they had to fly down lower, yep, and you could hear them and then find out where they are and see them against the cloud cover.
Yep, yeah. Yep. Yeah. Like, think about that. Sunny days to me are some of the greatest things.
Yeah.
Like, sunny days are fantastic things for me. It means if it's a weekend, I can go grab a round of golf.
Yeah, with your shiny new golf clubs.
With my shiny new golf clubs. I couldn't imagine hating sunny days and being terrified of them.
Yeah, because there was a country with somebody trained to kill sitting in a trailer in Arizona that was looking at you with a menacing object that could pull the trigger like a video game and kill you. But unlike the video game, there would be no way to reboot. We'll be back after the commercial and news break.